Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Troy News' Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Pacillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons. Dan, are you muted? Well, while Dan gets that figured out, we'll get there, I promise. We'll be talking about the Atlantic Division today for the ACC. As you know, it's where Syracuse is housed for its football program at the moment. And, we'll see who they're facing. Dan, you good this time?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Huh, that was weird. I wasn't muted. But, I was saying happy first week of fall or summer football camp, everyone.
Happy first day indeed. I know Dan and I, amongst others, are very, very excited for another fall of college football. And this is a perfect episode to kind of get that all kicked off.
Yeah, I mean, being excited about college football as a Syracuse fan, it's probably kind of what it's like about being someone who just like their memory wipes on a daily basis. So, like, you're excited about living out the day, but you're not quite sure, like, everyone else just looks at you like, why are you doing this to yourself? I think we've both kind of had some mostly positive takeaways from the few things that have been allowed to be leaked out from the team the last couple days. Aside from a couple of injuries today.
Yeah, the injuries weren't great. We'll touch on those quick before we jump in. Obviously, Denzel Ward, anyone in the offensive line, just not great to see any sort of injury. It seems that he's been silent a little bit. Some of the scenes minimal. The worrisome one, though, is John Raymond, who, the last thing you want to see from anyone on the defensive line, but especially him, it's just heartbreaking. You know, another potential injury that he's already sidelined with, and we just got started in camp.
Yeah, and it seems like Schaefer and Dowse have been trying to downplay it. I don't know if they would do it like that if it really was serious, but I didn't love the week-to-week thing. It did seem like he's going to be out for, until who knows. But they are saying it's not a big deal. So hopefully they are not just, trying to get one by everyone. And that it really isn't a big deal. Because like we said last week, he is potentially one of the most important players on the defense, right up there with Ron Thompson. The linebackers are all great, but we have a lot of them. We only have one John Raymond. So hopefully this is not a big deal.
Agreed. I mean, the week-to-week thing threw me as well. Definitely wasn't encouraging to hear that over day-to-day or temporarily sidelined. Hopefully it was just more of a, this is just how we're evaluating it rather than a kind of slip as to just how serious this is. Fingers crossed. And let's move on to non-Syracuse things. We'll circle back to SU. We have our Atlantic Division preview. As we were mentioning earlier, while Dan's getting back online here, Syracuse in the Atlantic Division, for those who still don't remember the nonsensical divisional names in our ACC, this is year three for us. I would hope that you're on board at this point, but some probably aren't. So there are seven teams including us, and we'll be going through all seven today. We won't dive as much into SU today because we do have in a couple weeks our full hour-long preview of just Syracuse. If you just wanted to hear Syracuse, maybe wait until then, but I guarantee you'll probably want to hear a little bit about our opponent.
Yeah, I mean, it's not coming from a Syracuse perspective, so I think it's all worth knowing about, especially because we play these teams every year.
Very,
until
very true.
The divisions of them, inevitably.
Which, hopefully.
Yeah, probably would be a good thing for Syracuse, but right now we are stuck in the division with, three teams that can be three of the best teams in the entire thing. On a fairly regular basis, so yay for that.
Hooray. Yeah, jumping in, because then we have a lot to cover in a short amount of time. Boston College. Beat the Eagles, obviously our chief rival in the ACC right now in all of college football. Until West Virginia and or Penn State start playing us every year on a regular basis again, and we find some venom-filled moments with them, but for the time being, it's BC, and that's totally all right. BC is a very interesting case, Dan. I think we'll just kind of go quick offense, defense, and then, at the end, we can kind of predict an order of finish. BC replaces a ton. I mean, the narrative about Syracuse has been that the Orange replaces a ton. But Boston College really, really replaces a lot of folks. And they lose half the defense. They lose almost the entire offense. The fact that they don't have, any real playmakers on offense outside of John Hellman's back should be concerning. I think the lack of Tyler Murphy will be a major, major downgrade for them. I know that, last year Murphy kind of took folks by surprise and really ran the BC offense on the ground. Probably better than any of us thought he could. And I think there's going to be a huge, huge drop-off with him not being under center.
Yeah, I think there's this narrative built around BC, and I don't think it's an unfair one, that Adazio has gone in there and really built a system that is exactly how he wants it, and he's bringing in players to it. And even if they're not the most talented team on the field, they just know what they're doing. And we saw that last year where I don't think they were the most talented team by any stretch, but they had a interesting playmaker in Tyler Murphy, who was not a perfect quarterback, but was a dangerous runner. And they just used him to the greatest possible effect for the 1 year. They had some decent running backs, and they just ground out wins and kept teams close. Kind of reminded me of the 2010 Syracuse team, honestly, where was not a super explosive team, but played good defense and just found ways to win the games they could. But you're right, this year is really going to be a test for the Adazio system. If he can plug in a new quarterback, whether it's Darius Wade or Troy Flutie, he's one of those. And they just keep on rolling and do their whole, go to an okay bowl game thing. It speaks really highly of what Adazio has accomplished there. If not, then obviously, he's not anywhere near the hot seat. That'd be crazy. He's done a very good job with BC, but it does make things a little more interesting in the Atlantic, where you can't just pencil in BC to be a solid bowl level team. But on the other hand, it's a really young squad. So if they come out and win six or seven games, there could be a lot to build on for them.
No, I completely agree. I think that what this group has going for it, and it's something that I think all of us would rather Syracuse had, is just the type of discipline and mistake-free football that, and in-game adjustments that allow for lesser teams to overperform, their talent. And that's one thing that BC has been able to do very quickly. And Adazio has really been able to instill from top to bottom. Saw some attrition around the program, but really not to the point of a lot of others, including, ours kind of twice in the last, six, 7 years. BC's been able to get a full buy-in, I think what helped for Adazio's first full class was the fact that it was, senior-laden. He had a ton of guys coming back from a really disappointed 2-10 squad in 2012, and that really allowed him to hit the ground running. I think, you know, the benefits were clear last year for Murphy, as well as having a lot of those younger guys see what those seniors could do with better coaching in 2013. And now 2014 is going to be the real test. Phil Connelly on it that you know, BC could take a step back this year and it would be well earned. I don't know if they're going to. I could see them finishing short of 6 wins, but it won't be because there's a lesser product on the field. It could just simply be because a couple teams got better, BC got slightly worse, and the weight kind of shifted in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think one of the things we say about BC a decent amount is that they've definitely found a very solid identity. You can't say that about every team in the ACC. I think there's actually a pretty clear divide between the schools like BC, Georgia Tech, Florida State definitely has an identity, Clemson, Duke at this point under Cutcliffe. All, even if they're not, you know, great teams across the board, they all kind of know what they are, and they slide into that role well. Whereas a team like Syracuse under Schaefer really hasn't found it. I would argue Miami, UNC, Virginia, all kind of seem more, there just always seem to be more question marks and more uncertainty. So even when BC doesn't have, you know, top 30, top 40 talent, they can overcome a lot just because there's a real coherence in what they do.
Very much so. Dan, if there's one player on this BC squad that you're really excited about this year, who do you think it is? And it could be offense, defense, doesn't matter. You're on mute.
I was muted. Yeah, it's going to be one of those nights. I really like their running back group. I think Hilleman didn't get a lot of press. It doesn't help following like a 2,000-yard rusher, but he did have a very nice year last year. Kind of a grinded out guy. You know, he's a pretty big back at 224, but he had 13 touchdowns last year. And then you have just a nice array of talent. Miles Willis, a little smaller, more of a step back, slightly more explosive. Then obviously the Syracuse local Tyler Rouse, who a lot of guys wanted, a lot of Syracuse fans wanted us to recruit, as he's from, off the top of my head, Baldwinsville. He's from the area. So I just think they have a very interesting array of runners. And obviously it's a team that runs the ball, that's what they do. So I think it should be fun to watch them, you know, do their thing and see if Hilleman can emerge as one of these like top level running backs that BC's been able to put out there the last couple of years.
Fair enough, fair enough. Hilleman's the easy choice here for me. But, you know, I think I really like Justin Simmons. You're looking at a senior, you know, one of the few seniors left on this defense. A guy who could really make a difference from a spot where BC hasn't necessarily been strong. Not that they've been weak either, but haven't necessarily been strong in recent years. And to see a secondary, you know, that has a player like him kind of sitting out there. I'm surprised and curious to see what he does, being kind of, you know, the main playmaker in a group of defensive backs that we don't really know a ton about.
Yeah, and BC always seems to have very solid defensive players. Usually more along in the linebacking core, but Simmons does seem to be a nice playmaker. He's a big safety, back there at 6'3". Kind of the same stature as Darrell Eskridge. Made a lot of tackles last year, had a couple tackles for loss, had a sack, had 2 interceptions, so he is kind of a do-it-all player for them.
Definitely. Turning the page on to our next opponent, Clemson. We like the Tigers, don't we, Dan?
In what way? On the field, they are a very good football team that is fun to watch.
Well, sort of fun last year. The defense is fun to watch last year.
Last year, you know. When Deshaun Watson's a very fun football team that's fun to watch. I know he's just one player.
Fair. So, yeah, I guess that's a good place to start. Deshaun Watson, Dan, why is Deshaun Watson one of the five players with an inside route to win the Heisman Trophy this year?
He is deadly accurate. He has all kinds of poise in the pocket. He's a fabulous runner. He played on a torn ACL last year and won football games for whatever reason. I'll still never be convinced that was a good idea, but he did it and will apparently be okay this year. He had Clemson playing like one of the best teams in the country when he was healthy. And really the health is the only major question mark with him. He's unbelievable to watch. I would not be shocked at all if he won the Heisman in 4 or 5 months, whenever, however far away from that we are. Not to get ahead of everything, but he's just a phenomenal football player. Reminds me, not athletically, but in terms of his poise as a quarterback, a lot of freshman Jameis Winston. But Jameis, except for that one awesome run into Oklahoma State, really isn't a rusher. Deshaun Watson, super fast and really make trouble for teams outside of the pocket. So he's just everything that you like in a dynamic college quarterback, you'll get it from Watson.
Indeed. If there's one place where you think Clemson could potentially be lacking this year, do you think it's the run game, or do you think that with Gallman back, with Tyson Dye back, that this team can kind of right the ship running? Because I think last year there was anywhere that lacked a little bit for the Tigers, it was probably there, and it was probably part of the reason why potentially dynamic Chad Morris offense couldn't really get going.
I don't know. I'm not blown away by anyone on the team. They have a couple guys who have been productive. Wayne Dallman, solid, had, you know, almost 800 yards last year. C.J. Davis and Adam Choice are both interesting players. I'm just way more enamored by their passing game. I think they have, again, a really stacked receiving core with Mike Williams and Artavis Scott and Jermaine Hopper. I know they have Sherron Peak, too. They have just so many receivers. So I think just having Deshaun Watson in there to open things up should only help the running game. I don't think having Cole Stout, who was far less dynamic and far less of a threat to take off himself or beat you down the field, did any real favors for the running back. So I don't expect any of them to really blow up. I think Watson and the receivers are going to be the focal point of the offense. But I wouldn't be surprised if they were a quietly really productive group next year.
All right. I guess shifting around to the defense a little bit, this team lost just about everybody from a lethal front seven. Who do you think is going to be the toughest person to replace? Obviously, Vic Beasley is a big name, but that kind of ignores Grady Jarrett as well, who I think the two of them kind of played off one another and enhanced both of their games a lot from week to week. Who do you think is the toughest player to replace on that front seven?
Jarrett was going to be the guy I was going to bring up. Beasley was a very dynamic pass rusher, but I think though you can, if you have a good defensive tackle, you can make defensive ends work. We've seen Syracuse do it in the past where a couple of years ago, we didn't think we had great defensive ends, but we had solid play in the middle with Jay Bromley and our defensive ends ended up being very productive. Grady Jarrett was a monster inside for Clemson, and I don't think Vic Beasley, who is as good a player as people say, I don't know if he would have been nearly the player he was if he didn't have Jarrett in there to really play, fill the gaps and really allowed Beasley to focus on rushing the passer. He wasn't a great run defender. And they do have a guy in Chapel Austin who has, you know, he had 3.5 sacks last year, a solid defensive end. They don't have a super, they have some big guys, but they don't have anyone with the experience of Jarrett. So I think he's going to be the hardest to replace. But replacing just a group like Jarrett and Beasley and Stephon Anthony, the middle linebacker, who was great for a couple of years, and Tony Stewart, like, they just have to replace so many guys. It won't be easy, and I think you have to expect them to take a step back, as anyone would, because number one defenses in the country don't often repeat as number one defenses 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Anthony is an unsung player in that conversation, but one for sure. It's interesting to me. Usually, you know, a really dynamic linebacker will get the brunt of the attention, especially in the college game. I feel it's just so many folks, especially given you have so many 3-4 schemes, so many schemes that really kind of focus in on that speed rush off, outside linebacker off the edge. It just seems like Anthony would be the focal point instead. And this isn't a bad thing for Clemson, the fact they had this problem. You know, having everything kind of go to Beasley and Jarrett took some of the spotlight off of him. But yeah, I think Anthony's going to be a tough, tough player to replace. Luckily, I think a guy like Kendall Joseph, and then obviously you have, you know, two more veteran guys coming in, some of the other linebacker spots, DJ Goodson, Ben Boulware. I mean, Boulware in particular has a ton of both, you know, actual results and potential sitting out there. So I think in general, the linebackers, while might have the biggest losses, they also had the biggest gains in terms of who's replacing. The one player, and there's two that come to mind, that I'm really scared of this year on Clemson's roster. I'm going to go with Mackenzie Alexander. Jaron Curse would be the other, but Mackenzie Alexander just came in with so much hype, so much potential, and you know what? I think he's really, really going to deliver on it. I think he's one of the best, if not the best corner in the conference already, and he's going to make some noise on a national level. I hope, for SU's sake, that we kind of avoid sending anybody his way, though we know that he's probably going to be blanketing Steve Ishmael when the two teams face later in the season.
That's a good point. Mackenzie Alexander actually today after their practice said that he was the best cornerback in college football and that no one was close. I think a guy named Vernon Hargraves would probably take exception with that down in Florida, but he's definitely, you know, he's in the discussion. I'd probably take a couple other guys over him too, but he's a very good player. As is Jaron Curse, their free safety. So they have a very nice secondary, which can help because they will not be getting the same pass rush that they got last year. So it should be a very good defense again. I just don't think it'll be quite the level that we saw this past season. But they have some pieces, and they have a lot of speed and a lot of talent because it comes in, and that's what they always have.
No doubt. Just moving on again, and again, this isn't to brush through our opponents. It's more to keep in mind that we do have, you know, 7 teams to cover and a short amount of time to do it. We'll definitely be sure to give a full breakdown of the divisional standings coming in. And Dan and I have not talked about this beforehand, so just as we have done in previous seasons, instead of reading wins and losses down the list for you, we'll instead be reading projected standings to you. So compelling radio here. Florida State, for a team that loses, what was that then?
I was going to say, are you saying we're about to talk about them Noles?
I'm talking about the Noles. For a team that loses as much as they are, I'd have to say I'm not at all worried about what Florida State puts on the field this year. That has nothing to do with Everett Colson. Has nothing to do with whether or not Dalvin Cook is actually on the team or not. This is everything to do with, this is Florida State. Jimbo Fisher's racking up top recruiting classes for years and years now. And FSU is ready to compete at the same exact level they have for the past several seasons.
Yeah, I think it'll be a closer race. I don't expect Florida State to walk into Death Valley and win by like 50 points this year. But it's tough to look at Florida State's totality of roster talent and say, yeah, that's a team that will definitely not make a run to the college football playoff. Obviously, Everett Dolphin is not in the same planet as Jameis Winston. I know Winston had a lot of interceptions last year and stuff, but Everett Dolphin is not as good a player, like, at all. But he's still a very good player. And he can be under Jimbo Fisher, who is a wizard at getting quarterbacks to be good enough to go to the NFL, and, you know, maybe not more. We'll see what happens with Winston. But I wouldn't be shocked if Wilson improved and became really top-line quarterback, which he hasn't really been yet in his career. He's had flashes, but that Florida State game last year, like, broke him, I think. So now he's down there. And I think even if he's not great, I think he'll be a step up from what they would have gotten from Sean McGuire, or if they wanted to throw DeAndre Francois to the Wolves, which I don't think they were going to. It should allow them to stay around a 10-win level, which I have a hard time seeing Florida State dropping out of for more than like a year at a time with the way they recruit.
I would agree. I think in general, we're kind of looking at a very, 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 again, good team, no matter who's the quarterback. I think Sean McGuire could do a perfectly fine job. And you know what? I think Golson can rebound. I don't think he's never going to be an elite passer. But I don't think we're going to see the kind of, you know, disastrous results that we saw last year between the Florida State game. Even the game, you know, with us, I mean, he had all those completions in a row, yes, but so many turnovers, just not a great game manager. I mean, he kept Syracuse, single-handedly kept Syracuse in a game against a much better Irish team when they really should have, you know, blown SU right off the field. So I'm very intrigued to see how that works out. The other elephant in the room, obviously, is Dalvin Cook. No one knows if he'll play, when he'll play. I'm tempted to think he will not, especially given all the heat that FSU's taken recently for how, I mean, and just for the last few seasons on how the Winston situation was handled, how in general, you know, FSU seems to be kind of above, at least to some, and in the national media, especially it's the narrative, seems to be above, you know, the rest of Tallahassee. I think Cook doesn't see the field. But even if he doesn't, I think Mario Pender will be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, they have a bunch of hugely, they have Pender, who was solid in limited time. I think Cook is probably the best playmaker on the team. I've had Florida State fans disagree with me in that point, and they probably know more about it than I do, but just watching a good amount of their games last year, I thought he was the most explosive player they have. They also have a freshman running back, Jeff Patrick, who's a five-star player, and running back who can, more than other positions, plug and play. So it's not like they're hurting for talent back there, but losing Cook would be a big deal. And I have no idea if he's going to play or not this year. It seems like when these things get dragged out, it seems like they're looking for a way to get him on the field, so we'll see. But it would be a big loss. But with Dolphin, with all those receivers like Bobo Wilson and Travis Rudolph and Herman Lane and Herman Whitfield, I think they'll find a way to score some points.
Agreed. I guess the one other player that I might want to bring up here, again, this is going to be less about a current guy, because I think we're pretty sold on Terrence Smith and Jalen Ramsey being, you know, big impact players for FSU as they have been in the past. But Dan, for you, what's the impact of Mario Edwards no longer being on this defensive line? I know last year we got to talk to Bud Elliott a little bit during the summer. And really discuss kind of, you know, just how important Edwards was, especially stopping the run. Do you think that he could be the most important departure for this team, even more so than perhaps Winston?
I wouldn't go that far. He's probably the most important departure on the defense, though. Their linebacking core is pretty much intact. Their secondary, aside from P.J. Williams and Ronald Darby, two big losses, but they have a ton of talent back there. But the defensive line is the big question. They didn't get a ton of pressure on the quarterback from their front to begin with, and they lose their three biggest guys there in Edwards, Goldman, and Holland. I think they do have some solid talent up there. Just today, Josh Sweat, who is one of the top recruits in the country, he's been practicing, and apparently he's ready to go, which is crazy because he, I think on September 19th last year, tore his ACL and dislocated his knee. But apparently he's back, and it's been like 10 months, which is insane. And then they have just all kinds of, like, if you're looking at the same chart as I am, the Bill Connolly chart, it's just blue chip talent all over the place. So they're definitely going to have some inexperience up front, but a lot of talent and a lot of experience behind it. So I think Edwards is a big loss, but I think that if a team is prepared to overcome that kind of loss from the defensive lines, it's probably a team like this Florida State group.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. And obviously, you know, not trying to rile up things. We're over at News Magician. We are pretty close with the FSU faithful and want to get that point across. Don't think Winston should be downplayed and his departure downplayed by any means, but just kind of exploring the possibilities of a life without Mario Edwards for this defensive front. I think this is a good place to stop for some halftime. Dan, if that works for you and your current list of drinks.
Oh yeah, I was thrown off by our slightly different format tonight, but let me pull it up because I have had a couple different things.
No worries.
Yeah, so I went to Single Cup Brewery last, or I guess they're technically called Single Cup Beersmiths in Astoria last weekend. Had a couple things from them. The highlights for sure were definitely, everything I had there was pretty good. I'd say the highlights were the Shogi, they called the Mini Soulbender IPA. It's really crazy, like most interesting flavors of beer I've had in a long time. Didn't have like the classic hoppy IPA taste, like at least super outwardly. There's almost like a toasty, almost buttery taste to it, but nothing like crazy or gimmicky. It was just a very interesting combination of flavors. Quite good, very drinkable. So I enjoyed that. I'd say the highlight of that trip was, and I've apparently had it before. I just didn't realize I had it when I ordered it. Their Beyond Olympic White Lager, which also really interesting. Very almost like a sour in terms of some of the flavors going on there, but then had like, you know, the very definitive wheat beer flavor. Really nice blend. They seem to really try some interesting things there, but nothing like, you know, we've talked about gimmicky beers in the past, and I know we both tweeted out links to Goldfarb's troll beer article that went up a couple weeks ago. Nothing like that would go on that list, but just some things that I haven't really seen a lot of other breweries try. Unfortunately, they didn't have the Kim Red Raspberry Sour Lager on tap when I went, but I have that a couple weeks ago, and I think I talked about it here. I tried elsewhere. I had Alpine Beer Company's Hoppy Birthday, which has, you know, as you can probably tell from the title, very, you know, hopped up beer, but really nice. It was done really smooth. Not too dissimilar from some of the other, like, top IPAs I've had. And I know it has super high scores on, like, beer advertising, like a 98%. So it's a pretty acclaimed beer. I was happy to find that. And then I tried the a couple things from Two Roads. I had their Road Jam, which I had talked about before, which is a raspberry sour, quite good. Hadn't had that in a while. I also tried a salted pineapple wit from a brewing concern, which I hadn't heard of before. It's apparently an English beer. It wasn't super salted or pineapple flavored. It kind of just seemed like a slightly pineapple-y but it was pretty good. So definitely something to look out for. I had never seen it before, and I was at a World of Beer, and they had it. So it was interesting, but definitely a nice mix of beers last week.
I was going to say, Dan, it looked more like a John week for you.
A little bit. I had, I went to a brewery. I went to World of Beer. We always spent some stuff. Had a Friday off where I just stumbled upon some different beers. So it was definitely a bit more of a heavy week than I've had in the past, which was nice because it was all mostly good stuff. A lot of good choices.
Nice. Looking through mine, let me just remember when that signed in. Sorry for any delay on your end, Dan. I am having a very rousing conversation about scheduling the Syracuse Twitter, and it just could not wait. For those who have been following along, it's been going for about an hour now. We're having a grand old time.
Yeah, I'm going to go disagree with the notion that losing by 40 points to LSU is better than winning 6 or 7 games and going to a bowl game, no matter what the bowl game is. But maybe it's just
good. Agree to disagree, fans. yeah, so things that I was drinking last week. Had Highland Park Brewing's Hello LA. It's a really good one for those who haven't had, probably most of you. And try out Pizza Port's Kook Double IPA. Just a really good, readily available IPA, Double IPA here on the market. It was great to grab a can of that. Had what I had been looking for a little while. I've talked about Modern Times Fortunate Islands here. Unfortunately, it doesn't get out to the Northeast. They're San Diego brew. Usually only get to SoCal, some NorCal, a little bit of Arizona. But they're Fortunate Islands, my favorite beach beer. Just a hoppy pale wheat lager. They have their Fortunate Islands with grapefruit zest. Obviously, it's no grapefruit sculpin, but it's a really, really enjoyable drink, a little bit lighter. It's got some of that great, great grapefruit flavor. Beyond that, only other real, like, interesting thing I had was Ideation. It was a barrel-aged wheat wine from Bottle Logic down in Orange County. It was a pretty good beer. Definitely enjoyed it. Have a bunch of other things kind of on the docket for this week. So we'll have plenty more to share next week as well, as always.
Very nice. And hopefully I'll have a similarly fruitful week this week.
Yeah. Okay. Louisville. For those who who've been following Syracuse football for the last decade or so, Louisville's kind of had this interesting, we haven't had a rivalry because I know Sean had kind of like a half-joking article years back that they kind of talked about Louisville as our sort of rival. But you know what, the Cards and Orange have really played a lot of interesting games. Even last year, it looked like a blowout on paper at the end, but had a lot more nuances to it than the box score is going to, portray. In particular, really maddening was, a certain spike ball inside of 3 seconds. Rule that, well, no, I wasn't aware of going in. I feel like if you're a player or a coach engaged in the game, you might have to know, but I digress. Louisville was a very good team last year, and they're going to be a very good team this year. The one problem area I can see right off the bat, though, is quarterback. Dan, who is the quarterback for the Louisville Cardinals?
I don't know.
They know?
I don't think they know either. I'd probably say Will Gardner, but he's very meh. He's decent. He had nice touchdown interception rate, but, he's only getting 6.6 yards an attempt. Nothing to get super excited about. He's not, he fumbles a lot. There's no great option. Reggie Bonifant is probably a little more exciting. He'll run around a bit. But he also takes sacks at, a comical rate. I'm reading Connolly's here. He has a 15.5% sack rate, which is legitimately astronomical. That's a huge number. And he also doesn't pick up nearly enough yards to, make up for it. It's not worth the risk. And he's not nearly as protective of the football as Bonifant. It's just, none of these guys are super exciting at all. I don't see an obvious guy stepping in here. Luckily, they have some talent elsewhere, and their defense is fantastic. I don't know that this offense is going to be great this year, but The other side of the coin is that Bobby Petrino just got there last year and had a pretty decent offense. And he's a guy with a pretty well-defined system that hasn't had a chance to really get it rolling yet. So maybe there'll be a little more coherency and consistency on coming from the coaching, and maybe that'll help improve them in some areas. But they also lose guys like Devontae Parker, who was a monster. So who knows? I really don't know what to make of Louisville's offense.
Yeah, neither do I. And for all the reasons you stated right off the bat, it's just kind of hard to tell what we're getting here. We're getting quarterbacks who've seen the field, but none who are really sure can excel. The loss of Devontae Parker is not to be understated. I do think he was one of the best receivers in college football last year. I think that he's going to be a very, very good NFL receiver this year, a great downfield threat. That's something to watch if you are watching football on Sundays as well, which I sometimes am, sometimes I'm not. What also kind of worries me about Louisville are kind of some of the same things that we've seen with Syracuse. Kind of a high-risk, high-reward, turnover-driven scheme last year that really kind of boosted the stock, and rightfully so, of guys like, you know, Jared Holloman, Lorenzo Malden. Like, these are guys who much like Schaefer's teams, you know, get after the football, try to force turnovers, try to cause havoc. And it worked for them, worked like a charm. Louisville was pretty much in every game until that last one. And by and large, I think this is an interesting team for Bobby Petrino, because it's not offensively focused, but it's one that if they stay on their current trajectory and keep kind of going out and getting Georgia transfers, going out and really solidifying an aggressive defense, it speaks to kind of what we've said about Schaefer for a while. Like, Schaefer's a good coach, but like, make sure you surround yourself with great offensive minds if you're a defensively minded coach. And we'll see if Lester is one of those. For Louisville, Petrino seems to have surrounded himself with quality defensive coaches who built a very, very strong defense on the fly. And you know what? Again, they're going to be good. They might not be as aggressive or as productive as last year, but last year was also an anomaly in terms of just how good they were. You say the same about Clemson, too. Last year was an anomaly, and a step back doesn't necessarily mean that they're worse. It just means that they weren't the best. So I think that defensively, there are pieces to replace, but I do think that a more well-rounded group, and one that comes down to earth a little bit, could still be just as effective as last year's.
Yeah, and it's easy to look at what they've lost defensively and say that they're going to take a big step back, but no team adds more from the transfer market. Obviously, you brought up the two Georgia guys, I guess three if you hadn't Grantham, who left Georgia or was leaving Georgia and went to Louisville as defensive coordinator. So they have Josh Harvey Clemens and Shaq Wiggins, who are both fairly important players for Georgia 2 years ago, both now playing for Louisville and coming off of their transfer year out. They'll both presumptively be starters. And they had Devontae Fields, who, if I remember correctly, was the Big 12 defensive freshman of the year a couple years back and was slated to go to play in the FCS after getting some issues at TCU, and now he wound up at Louisville, which is kind of came out of nowhere and is a big deal for them, losing Lorenzo Malden. And they return most of their defensive line. So this group, they do lose a decent amount, but they just add in a bunch of really experienced playmakers. So they might not have a 14-interception Jerod Holloman, who, had one of those really crazy years that it's hard to explain, but they have just a bunch of guys who have played elsewhere and a couple of guys who played for Grantham. So they should be able to slide into that defense pretty easily.
Agreed. Sorry, just kind of elevating our rate of churn here as we get through these teams, realizing that, Dan and I used to do this literally every single team for an hour over a full summer. and a busy summer and just kind of a change of schedule prevented that. So now trying to boil down that same, you know, in-depth view into 7 minutes or so, definitely proving more challenging than I thought it would be. But NC State, we have our thoughts on the Wolfpack. It's weird. I feel like, Dan, do you feel like we have an adversarial relationship with them? Because I don't know why. I mean, I know there's like a couple incidents now, but I feel like we have an adversarial relationship with their fans. Not on the same level as Clemson, but I know in general, NC State's not too thrilled with us on a regular basis. We're not too thrilled with them, and it just becomes a cyclical thing. You really can't point to anything notable that happens in any game between our two teams.
I'm going to say it stems back to the 2000...
Gottfried comment?
Excuse me?
Do you think it was a Gottfried comment?
I forgot what year... I remember those. I don't know if that was it, but I think when we went down there, I think our last year in the Big East, we went to a... We played a road game there, and we blew them out, and we had, like, apparently just thousands and thousands of North Carolina transplant or CNY transplant fans down there, and they kind of, this is after obviously they knew we were coming to the league, and then they were just kind of thrown off by it. And I know their fans like went into the whole St. John's like, why are we selling them tickets mode for a minute. So I think that was like kind of a rude introduction. We also won the game by a decent amount if I remember correctly. And then it's just been I don't know. It has been strangely contentious. I think having a lot of Syracuse fans in the area doesn't help, especially because NC State has this weird, like, third wheel relationship with Duke and UNC already. And I don't know. It definitely has been kind of strange. The Godfrey thing doesn't help. The weird, like, ties between our football coaching staffs and the fact that we went down there and won our first football game doesn't help. It's one of those interesting things. Across the board, really, where we seem to have we've really defined our relationships with these fan bases really quick. Like Clemson, obviously, we have the really harsh, like, obnoxious back and forth. And then Florida State, we strangely have the kinship with, which doesn't make all that much sense on paper. BC, we have kind of a pretty congenial rivalry with, but we're also pretty cool with those guys. But NC State, it's weirdly contentious, so... I almost think it's helped us fit in well, or at least more easily than a lot of us thought we would, considering we had such defined relationships with all these Big East fan bases.
Yeah, it is weird. I guess we'll get back to actually talking about the team. that whole conversation about our relationships with fan bases can live and die another day. You know, I think this team really does come down to, and it's not to say that there isn't talent elsewhere, because I think there is a decent amount of talent on this Wolfpack squad, and it's one that is actually getting better as we go. I think Dylan's put in some good work on the recruiting front, and he's seen some great results. But he's also gotten some great results out of and the kids that were already there when he showed up. The big name, though, is Jacoby Brissett. And for Brissett... you know, he's this weird, I mean, like NC State. He's weirdly hovering around national conversations. Everyone wants the Wolfpack to win 9-10 games a year for some reason. And you know what? Maybe they can. But it does seem like everyone wants Brissett and NC State to be very good this year. And I think it's an exciting – he leads an exciting offense, only in the sense that if someone else can produce other than him. We saw what happened. Brissett was on his own. I think for most of the Syracuse game, that was the case. And he struggled, not completely, but enough so that he wasn't able to help, you know, the Wolfpack pull away from a team they were should have been clearly better than. I am curious to see who can really help Brissett. I think that the running game can only stand to improve last year after they shuffled in a lot of different guys. Shadrack Thornton and Matt Days were two guys who've seen reps for a couple of years now. And in general, I think that, you know, some injuries here and there for this group, a fairly veteran offensive line. But there's a lot to like as far as production goes. Where I'm worried, and then I'll let you jump in, Dan, defensive front and the wide receivers in particular. There's just not – I'm not seeing enough coming back, and I wasn't necessarily impressed with what left.
Yeah. I just don't think the receiving corps was that great. They had Brissett, who is like an amped-up version of what BC got last year, the quarterback position, where not quite the runner that we just talked about him. His name is slipping my mind. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. BC's quarterback last year.
Right, Trey Murphy.
Tyler Murphy. Yeah. He wasn't quite the runner that Murphy was, but he was a very solid passer. Didn't give the ball away. Wasn't like super pinpoint accurate. He was under 60%, but he threw for way more touchdowns than people probably expected. He only threw for 5 picks. And just controlled the ball. Not a huge playmaker in terms of like down the field throws, but just protected the ball, and they had a solid rushing game between him and Thornton and Days. I think more than anything, NC State's just an example of the scheduling thing that we harp on so often. They lost 4 games in a row to start the ACC play. Florida State, where they kind of almost won. So then they got blown out by Clemson 41-0, which I believe was Deshaun Watson coming out party, and it was all of that. They got beat very handily by BC and then pretty easily by Louisville. So even after getting dismantled in 3 games and having an upset bid fall apart pretty badly against Florida State, they were 4-4, and they were able to basically just beat up on the bottom of the ACC, which included us, and make a bowl game and beat UCF. So I don't know that NC State was all that great last year. I think their final F plus was 55, and they were 8-5. So it wasn't like they were burning down the house or anything, but perception just equals reality, and that's why people are going to pick NC State to win 8 games again this year. They don't play anyone really, but they do what they need to do against the dregs that they schedule, and they can withstand long losing streaks against actually good teams because they've already built themselves up early in the season. So it's tough for me to project because this offense wasn't great last year, but it's largely the same this season, minus a couple of middling receivers. But who knows if Brissett takes a step forward as a senior. If he does, he'll be in the top, a large top tier of quarterbacks, I think, as a general playmaker. So that should be exciting for them. And again, they don't really play anybody, so they'll have a bunch of wins under their belt by the time they step on the field against Louisville on October 3rd.
When's the part when I can start just copy and pasting this snippet of the conversation and just start sending it out to the portions of the SU fan base?
Yeah, it's just like, I guess they have built-in advantages of being a large state school and being in a slightly more talented area, but they were also like really bad 2 years ago, and Syracuse without any real offense went down there and won pretty easily to our first year in the ACC. So it's not like they were coming from some like way better position than SU was. And they've just been smart about rebuilding. And I'm sure once they get themselves above water and they're fighting for like the Louisville spot in the league or, you know, that second tier of teams, they'll probably start ramping up their schedule a bit. Now, if they don't, then we can make fun of them. But for where they were when they probably put these schedules together, they did the right thing.
No, exactly. There's plenty more we can talk about there, but won't at the moment. Syracuse, we won't spend much time here because there's plenty more to talk about with SU, and we will get to it for probably what ends up being over an hour. But on paper, SU looks better in some ways, worse in others. That's definitely influenced a lot of media attention. I know I put up the article on Tuesday that kind of referred to, you know, just how we're seen by the media. It's not great. And you know what? That's not a problem. The only way and the best way to fix that is just go win games. You go win games, that perception changes. A lot of people see the same issues that Syracuse has over at BC, and BC being lauded for them, we're being derided for them. No, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but the point is people see what they want to see in these previews. A lot of people are seeing negative for Syracuse. The only way that we get past that is go in the game, because you know what? This Orange team, while they're not the most talented in the world, I think the in-game adjustments might be lacking at times. I think that they still have plenty of potential, and if we get rid of some of the main reasons for losses last year, I'm referring to a lot of the stupidity around the offense, we could see a different product on the field. And even if the losses start adding up, it won't be in the same manner that they did last year.
No, I think the two things that should just jump out off the page is that, I mean, they're both related. Syracuse's quarterback situation was so untenable last year. The fact that we were in some of the games that we were in, mostly Clemson, like half of Louisville, parts of the NC State Duke game, like all games that a couple big plays could have swung the other way, it's almost like it shows you how good that defense was last year. And obviously they lose a lot of guys on defense, but I trust that the defensive coaching staff will put a solid product on the field, as they've done pretty much every season since the Maroon Schaefer era began. And the offense, quite literally, there's so little room to move down offensively. Even just pure rote regression to the mean should mean the offense is a good deal better. And then if you add in a coaching strategy that makes sense and utilizes players correctly, there's a chance that Syracuse just jumps to, like, national average, and it's just a giant leap. Like, it won't look like – it won't be the 2012 offense, but if you just move the Syracuse team from, like, 100 and whatever finish in the 110s in offense to the 70s or 60s, that's just a monumental improvement, and that could be worth two or three wins by itself. So I don't know. I still think if I'm asked to project the record, I'd probably go 5-7 just because there are so many question marks, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And we talked about Raymond earlier. That's a concern for me. But there's just no way this offense doesn't improve and is not even just like below average in terms of effectiveness, and that's a huge upgrade from where it was. So I have trouble seeing Syracuse just being the same team as last year, because that just doesn't make any sense. Like, unless Hunt gets hurt again and we're playing the dance with the quarterbacks again, there's no reason why the offense shouldn't be at least better enough to make this team respectable.
Right. No, I think that's a very, very understated part of it all. It's just how much, incremental change from a deplorable offense can result in wins. So we'll see, and I think there's a lot more to talk about with SU, but we'll scoot on past them just for the sake of time here. Lastly, Wake Forest. The Demon Deacons, I brought them up the other day. I think there's a lot of positivity around the Demon Deacons, as there should be. I think that the things are changing in the right direction for Dave Clawson and the Deacs, but I don't necessarily think it's any more positive than what's going on at Syracuse at the moment. Wake is SU over the last 5 to 7 years, like without the on-field results, if that makes sense. And that's not to diss, Wake at all. It's just to say that, like, let's hold our horses on this meteoric rise everyone's seeing, begin and remind them sometimes teams take steps back. Wake doesn't really have a lot of talent on the roster right now, especially when they lost, their two best players, Kevin Johnson and Merrill Knoll. Like, this is a group that I think can still be more competitive than it was last year and might end up at 2 or 3 wins once again. It's tough to kind of just
slot them in front of Syracuse in the Atlantic Division standings without wondering kind of how and why.
Yeah, I think Wake, I don't think there's as much talent at Wake as there is at SU right now, but I think the roster turnover kind of mirrors what's going on at SU. Obviously, they have a younger quarterback who I think has some potential when he's not getting sacked all the time. John Walford, I talked about Bonifant's 15% sack rate a little while ago. Walford was the full-time starter aside from 16 attempts from Tyler Cameron, which I believe were at least in part in the Syracuse game because we knocked Walford out. He got sacked 55 times, 13% sack rate the whole season, which is rough. And he still managed, 12 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. It's not great, but it's way better than what Syracuse had last year. And he was a freshman. So I think there is some hope there. I'm not buying the playmakers. Their rushing game was just so bad. Their offensive line was really bad as well, and they lose two starters. Not a ton of experience there. The defense, I don't know if it'll quite take the step back that some are projecting. Their corners were quite good, but they also weren't getting thrown on all that much because Wake was down pretty big in a lot of games. And they returned a lot of their front seven, which played fairly well at points last year. So obviously I don't think this is a bowl team or anything, but I do see where there is some positivity. I just think anyone who's saying that Wake is passing Syracuse this year, despite the fact that a Syracuse team playing a third-string quarterback went in and beat them by 20-something on the road last season, is a bit aggressive. I think both teams will take a step forward, but I also think people are almost understating how bad Wake was last year compared to Syracuse, which had to have a lot of injuries and just weird luck and a really terrible offense and still beat that team by 20.
Oh, phenomenally true. And just to chat through Wake's actual roster, who is on it? I have to say, and we'll take one question on this, and then we'll kind of sort out records, et cetera. To me, I think John Walford, skill-wise, should take a step forward, but I'll tell you why production-wise he may not. And it's the offensive line. The offensive line is largely rebuilt. I think he was under attack a lot last year. So maybe it's addition by subtraction, but you know what? He still has a lot of guys trying to work together that just haven't done it before. And to me, I think that just spells not great for a player who's not really going to have a running game again, as Wake has failed to for almost a decade now. Receivers are going to be better, hopefully. And then again, it's that line. He also has to contend with the fact that teams are going to be able to pass on his defense, and that could force him onto the field a lot more than he was last year. I mean, that was a saving grace for both SU and Wake last year, was the fact that defense could stay on the field for extended periods of time and keep them in game. I guess for me, I like Walford's upside, but I also don't like what he's faced with this year in terms of the sophomore campaign.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, John Walford has a chance to be a good quarterback. The problem is we've seen quarterbacks are broken by bad situations. We've seen Syracuse do it to a couple people. We've seen perhaps it happen to a couple Syracuse quarterbacks. So Walford might end up bouncing back and being pretty productive, but I don't think he can have another 55 sack season. I just don't think that's healthy. I don't think it's good for players' confidence. All these things that are hard to really put down in numbers, but they do exist. And so if Wake's offensive line doesn't improve, there isn't a whole lot of hope for that team this season. Maybe there's some addition by subtraction since they do lose a couple of their big starters who obviously didn't help much last season. But also throwing out a really green offensive line isn't generally a good equation anyway. So we'll see. I think Wake is an interesting one. I think they're recruiting probably better than they should be. I do think that whole coaching staff deserves a lot of rope coming from where it is. That's a very difficult situation. But I wouldn't be expecting a bowl game this year, maybe not next year. I think we'll see. It's a long rebuild for them because they were very lacking in talent. The only FBS team that might have been in a worse situation last year was probably Kansas, who at this point has 54 scholarship players. It's not that bad for Wake, but they're going to need a couple years to totally turn over the roster. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're given a lot of rope, and I think they probably deserve it.
Indeed. I guess to wrap us up, Dan, your projected standing, don't need a record, just 1-7, who are we looking at in the Atlantic?
I'm taking a shot and saying Deshaun Watson stays healthy, and I'll take Clemson by a very slim margin over Florida State, and then I'll take Louisville, I'll take NC State, I'll take Syracuse, BC, Wake Forest.
You forgot Florida State.
I said Florida State, after Clemson.
Okay, FSU Twitter, we got you.
I could be totally wrong. I mean, all it takes is one bad, you know, one, hey, let's play Deshaun Watson injured against Wake Forest and have to take a cheap shot decision by Dabo to have this all unravel. But I think he's far and away the best player in the conference. When he's healthy, maybe the best quarterback in the country, for all we know. So I just ride with good quarterbacks, and I think Watson is superb when he's healthy.
That's fair. You know, I've got Clemson. I'm not thrilled about it, if only because I'm scared of Florida State. But I also think that, you know, they could just have a step back season. It's not a bad thing. Step back to them, probably still 10-2. So I just think that their crossover this year is what's problematic, and that's Georgia Tech. So looking at things, I've got Clemson, I've got Florida State, I got Louisville, and then I've kind of got a muddled group, and I'm going by way of tiebreaker I think Syracuse and NC State are tied in that fourth spot. I think NC State gets the tiebreaker there, but you know, so it really is a minuscule margin for them. I don't think that they're in the same class as Louisville at all. I think State goes, you know, about 3-5 in the league. I got Syracuse coming in after them due to tiebreaker. Boston College takes a step back. And then Wake Forest. It's weird that no one else is seeing things that way. I guess I could see why. I also can't. So, yeah, we'll leave it at that. And then I guess, closing it out, Dan, do you see any Atlantic team playing in the college football playoff this year? Just the two semifinal games.
I think either of those top two teams could. Florida State, it's so quarterback dependent. Florida State gets, like, first half of 2014 Everett Golson, and he plays, you know, the pseudo Heisman level for what he was playing at before the Florida State game last year, which is really weird to say now because he's now on that team. They could totally get there. I think having Dalvin Cook would obviously help a great deal. And Clemson, I don't know. Clemson, I don't think is quite as deep in terms of talent as Florida State, but I think that their top level playmakers might be a little better this season. I think I wouldn't pick either one of those. I've actually, my current college football playoff is out, which I've written about a bit elsewhere. I don't think I have an ACC team making it this year, but I could see either of them being the representative in the right situation.
It's fair. I don't have either of them in my top four. You have Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl, so that's a thing. Yeah, and then sorry, Florida State, you are playing in. Wait for it. I do. Dan's seen this spreadsheet, pretty extensive list. I have you in the Citrus Bowl. You're facing Mississippi. Hooray!
Do you have every bowl written out?
I do.
Who do you have in the Emerald Diamond Bowl?
Emerald Diamond. Why don't I have the Emerald Diamond Bowl?
Uh-oh.
Is it called something else?
I don't know. Do they switch sponsors this year?
Maybe.
It might have. That happens. Oh, it's the Foster Farms Bowl now. It's up. It's huh, in Tallahassee. Yeah, that's right. That happened last year. That was just the first random bowl that popped in my head.
I do have the Foster Farms Bowl. And Arizona State and Pittsburgh.
Who? Who was the first team?
Arizona State.
That'd be interesting. Arizona State versus Pittsburgh. That'd be, I don't think Pitt good enough to face Arizona State in a bowl, but maybe.
No, I mean, they're not. That's the point here. Arizona State is going to win that game going away, and Pittsburgh is going to win
oh,
they win Birmingham.
That's the amazing storyline in that team. I see why you did that.
Yeah, because I really just wanted to see the Panthers wipe out the face here.
You really had to slide Pitt into a bowl they're not going to make because you want to see them get beat by Todd Graham by 30. That's mean. That's a mean thing.
30? 30? 40? Arizona
yeah,
State is going
to
be
we
so angry.
We don't have a shot of winning the Pac-12 this year, Arizona State. But we're going to put you in the Foster Farms Bowl just to play your coach's old team for the lull.
Arizona State is going to be so angry that they missed out on the playoffs that they are going to take it all out. Actually, no, I have Arizona State finishing fifth in a very tightly packed Pac-12 South. And that
Pac-12
is not
might be the most fun. That might be the most fun division this year. Like the SEC West is what it is, and it's great. But the Pac-12 South is the SEC West with, like, unrelenting offense. And it's just as tight.
Oh, I'm going to love it, especially since there's 7 p.m. kickoffs here and not 10 p.m.
Yeah, I don't mind the 10 p.m. because it gives me an excuse not to go out and waste money at bars. And I can stay up till 1 a.m. and base an entire, like, 14 hours watching football. And then if Hawaii's on, I won't sleep.
Oh, I go the full 18. I go 6 a.m. Yeah, I go 6 a.m. when game day starts out here, all the way through to the end of the Hawaii game at, like, midnight.
Yeah, I hope we get more Hawaii football this year, just because I don't even care, like, if it's good or who it is, or I hope we get more, like, the Washington State-Cal game last year or Wazoo, where what's-his-name broke the passing record, but they lost on, like, a 19-yard field goal miss. That was one of my favorite game-watching experiences of the year. And I'm so excited for the wall to be back.
And we'll end it there on an up note. So, yeah, Dan, thanks as always for joining. I wish we could have a Pac-12 podcast. Dan, thank you as always for joining. Much appreciated. We got to talk through a very fun Atlantic division.
Yeah, next week, I'm assuming we're doing the Turtle next week, which is going to be, I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen to Toast School because that's the nature of that division, so that should be fun.
Yeah, we're going to have a blast with that group. So for Troy Noons and Absolute Podcast, I'm John. That was Dan. Please be sure to subscribe, review, rate us on Blog Talk, on iTunes. Much appreciated. And go Orange in just a few weeks now. We're counting down.
Let's go Mets.